Okay, so today on the Plant Cutting Podcast, we have Howard G. Charing, and Howard put out this amazing Amazonian angel oracle based on the works of Pablo Amaringo, and we're really excited to speak with Howard today. So, Howard, how are you?
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for the invitation. I'm looking forward to our conversation. Yeah, I've enjoyed your podcast so far as well, so it's fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So our first question is usually, what brought you to the plant path?
Well, that's a good question, yeah. It's such a long time ago. Oh, let me think. Well, obviously, I'm very interested in shamanism and traditional ways and indigenous wisdom and so on. And that kind of brought me back in kind of the mid-90s to ayahuasca. And I'd looked into it and had a couple of friends who were doing it. So I said, hey, I'm going to come along, you know. And so we went to Peru and it was kind of a revelatory experience, obviously, a really beautiful healing experience. And then I worked with plants as well. So I stayed longer and longer and longer, and eventually I started taking groups over there as well. So it was just not just personal, it was also, you know, working with people too. Yeah, it's a beautiful path and it's changed my life. And I was only thinking the other day, how much has changed my life? I mean, just the basic stuff has changed my life. How I sleep, my daily rhythms, the food I eat, my health, my energy, on those basic levels. I'm not saying about I've had wonderful life-changing visionary experiences, which I have. I mean, they've turned things around in some respects, but at many, many levels, working with the plants has changed how I live my life.
Yeah, that's amazing. I guess the next natural question would be, for our listeners who don't know, who is Pablo Amaringo?
Well, Pablo Amaringo was, I mean, he died in 2009. He was, apart from being a beautiful man, was the first person to paint his visionary experiences in ayahuasca. He used to be a shaman. He was a senior shaman, a high-ranking shaman. But he kind of stopped because he was attracting too much attention from the bad guys who tend to put bad stuff on people. It's kind of common in certain places of the world. And he was clearing them. Then he became the target. He thought, I've had enough of this. And he did have an interest in painting. So he started to paint his visions. And he was encouraged by this by Dennis McKenna and Luna. And his work became worldwide back in 1991 with the publication of Ayahuasca Visions by himself with Luna. And that's where I kind of connected from there. I remember I had the book, and it was beautiful stories, and the art was fantastic. And I met Pablo in 2000. And it was just this beautiful experience. He was a real master. Just being with him was a lot. You felt different just being in his presence. And we got friendly, and I bought some of his work. And anyway, I digress a little bit. It's more about Pablo. Yeah, Pablo was the first person to, and he still is, I think, to paint his visionary experiences from hallucinogenic plants, just put it that way, from the Amazonian, from the ayahuasca. And he founded a school, Usco Ayala, in Pucallpa, where he lived. And his work, his artwork, what he earned from the artwork, went into the school. So his primary purpose was to have this school and to train young children, show young children not just art, but ethics, culture, indigenous wisdom, teach them maths, English, all sorts of things, a whole mixture of things. And that was his driving force. And he, so many artists now who have learned, trained in his school, are now kind of well-known artists in their own right, painting visionary art and so on. Yeah, what can I say about Pablo? And then actually back in 2005, 2006, I was drinking ayahuasca and had a vision during the ayahuasca. The ayahuasca was showing me Pablo's work, Pablo's motifs, Pablo's art. And then the message said, do a book with Pablo regarding his latest work. I thought, wow, isn't that amazing? Wow, you know. And the next day I kind of sat with it and then discussed with my friend Peter Klaus, who we worked together on the book. And then after the retreat finished, went down to Pucallpa and spoke to Pablo about this, and his face lit up. And so we did a book together. A very, very beautiful book. Very, as I said before, before we started recording it, he knew he wouldn't be around to see his publication. He knew that. This is, he died in 2009. The book was published in 2011. So working with the book, as I said, it was like transcribing the Gospels. It had such a special feeling for it. And I'm very, very pleased to bring Pablo's work to a wider audience, a wider global scale, and his art has been exhibited in so many galleries in so many different countries. But he is the guy at the pinnacle who has influenced so many other artists in visionary art and so on. So it's a very, it was a very, very lovely person.
Yeah, what an inspiration. He's just done so much. And yeah, his art's so special. And it's awesome that you were able to work with him on that book. It's kind of like an autobiography of him, right? The Ayahuasca Visions of Pablo Marengo.
Yeah, we put his biography in there, and yeah. and every plant. I mean, the plants he did. I mean, I'll show you the book here. This is this is the book. It's a very beautiful
book. It's gorgeous.
It weighs 1.7 kilos, so it's a hefty book.
Mm-hmm.
Every plant he did, he painted is awesome. Botanically identifiable. So I was able to identify every single plant he painted with a Latin name, so give it additional reference. There were two plants I couldn't identify, but I went to a meeting with the professor of botany at the Loreto University in Iquitos. He identified the remaining two. So,
good.
It was just a thing that I had to do. I had to do 100%, 100% identification. So no one's going to read it, no one's going to notice it, but it had to be done, perfection. So I was very proud of that.
It's really awesome. And then now you've written this in 2022, the Amazonian Angel Oracle deck and these cards that go with it. So why was this the next step for you? Why this book why these cards?
A good story here as well, because back in 2015, I was visiting Pablo's family, and they were showing me some of his sketches. Pablo did sketches of the plants, of all some of the characters in the paintings and various things. And he has some beautiful sketches of angels. And I thought, aren't they beautiful, these angels? I mean, they weren't, it wasn't something I could use. They were pen and ink, and some were colored in different stages. But I was really inspired by that. So I spoke to his son, Juan, and said, look, you okay if I work with Pablo's ideas and bring his wisdom into an oracle, an angel oracle thing, And so we made an agreement and so on. And so I get back home in 2015. I do had a few done. None, it's not Pablo's original art, by the way, but we worked, it's his original, his palette. So the colors are very Pablo, the colors you could put against pictures of his book, and they'd be very, very similar. And I did wrote a few narratives, and then nothing happened. And I just started doing other things, traveling, doing this and doing that. And they went in the box on a shelf over there. And that's where they stayed until 2020. I get home from Peru. I was in Peru at the time. I get home after three extra flights back to Europe because everything was closing down. Everything was shut down, getting down. So I get back, and I did a shamanic journey. I had to stay at home 14 days, assigned with the frontier police. I've been self-imposed quarantine and da-da-da-da. And which I was very happy with, it because I've been traveling. I was just happy to get home and do nothing, completely chill out.
Yeah. For sure.
That kind of thing. But then I did a shamanic kind of divinatory journey to see how long is this going to last for? How long will this lockdown thingy situation occur? And the information I got, which proved, for me, certainly to be accurate in hindsight, was October 2021. And this is in March 2020. So I thought, oh my God, I've got to do something. I'll go crazy. I've got to do something. I'm like 18 months here. I've got to do something.
Yeah.
And I went to bed that night, had a dream. And in this dream, an incorporeal being, an angel, call it what you want, appeared to me and said, now's the time. And I knew exactly what the topic was. So the next morning, went to the thing over there, the shelf there, and took out the box and blew the dust off. And there we are. And it was a beautiful thing. It was an inspirational thing. And it certainly kept me going, creative, kept me busy, active during the 18 months of the lockdown, which I was allowed to go out to do shopping and stuff like that with a bit of paper, so I'm going to the store or something, and the police would ask sometimes, it was a very strange period, but I had something that was perfect timing for me to do. And I have to be thankful for the pandemic, because it gave me the opportunity to do this for the pandemic. I mean, that's crazy, huh? It gave me an opportunity to do this, shall we say.
Yeah. that I think a lot of people took that opportunity to do some creative activities or just start a business or do an art project or write a book and
just to ground down. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And that's interesting because I'm a painter as well. I've been on Facebook. I actually got more involved with the internet online, you know, keeping contact with people. And on Facebook, and I was showing some of my painted work, some of my painted stones and rocks. And a lot of people got inspired. They used to show the person pictures, their whole families together, painting rock. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Howard, and so on. So I think if you had a kind of if your orientation is more material, you know, material things like the clothes and the cars and so on and so forth, it must have been hell, you know. But if you had a more philosophical, spiritual orientation, it was for many people, I know, a kind of an opening opportunity to do something new and something different. Of course, a lot of people's absolute disaster, but for other people, it's a mixed bag, really, wasn't it? Yeah.
And somebody like you who's done a lot of time, spent a lot of time in retreat, you know, you're a lot more familiar with yourself, your own desires and thoughts and so on. But I think for a lot of people, it was the first time they actually could stop for a moment and really see, you know, what's going on in their life.
Yeah, it was a big shift for a lot of people. That's very, very clear. And people have changed since then. I mean, that's another thing I've heard and seen with people as well. But they're good. Mm. They're good.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about the artists for these cards and how the art came to be?
Yeah, well, I have a friend. She's a graphic designer. She lives in the same city. Her name is Karina Dragon, and there's a picture of her, a bio of her in the book. She's done some small work, like promotional material for me in the past, and I spoke to her, which is interested in doing this. So she did a few, I think, 4 or 5 drawings, black and white drawings, and they were nice. And I said, oh, that's fine. And we had to tweak them a little bit, you know, the positions, what's around them. And then she went on to her computer graphics system, and she digitized them, is the word, I think, digitized them with a tablet and so on. And they were very beautiful. And I wrote some stories and some narratives for those particular angels we did. I still didn't have a colorist because the coloring is also digital coloring is a very special, specific cure. And I was doing a Zoom workshop, online Zoom workshop. And I mentioned, anybody know anyone who does graphic art and coloring? Yeah, I do. And that was Alex. And now at this time, I'd never met him. We just interacted online. Alex called you from who lives in Bucharest. And so I sent him the files and he did some coloring. He didn't quite understand the palette because I said, no, this has to be the palette. These are the colors we have to work with. Anyway, we got it together. And it came a moment where he did something really beautiful, really, really beautiful. It was so good. I said, Alex, this is so damn good. You know, you've really got it now. You really got it. It's clicked. Unfortunately, you have to go back and do the ones you've done before. I know.
So, it's worth it, Alex.
It was fantastic. Everybody did, well, as I said, we did the perfect best. And with Karina, it was so fabulous because we're on, during the pandemic, lockdown restrictions and so on. So we're working on Skype. So I'm standing in front of the on the screen and saying, yeah, this angel, she's doing this. And behind her is this. To her side is this, and I want this around here, and use this particular idea. And it was all done online, and she would do a few sketches, and we'll take a look, and we get it down to the one we want to work with, and then she would digitize it. So mostly done online, all the coloring. I only saw Alex well after the pandemic, and I was in Bucharest, and I said, let's meet up for a dinner or something. And I met him at the Athenaeum in Bucharest, and he's really tall guy. He's 2 meters, this guy. And I thought, nice. God, you're much bigger than you are on the screen, you know.
That's so funny.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it? I mean, well, it's crazy, this virtual life, when you talk to people and you haven't actually met them. And when you do meet them, it's outside the kind of comprehension. You see the person on a kind of computer screen. So he was so happy. He did his best. And so I think for Karina and for Alex, it was also a very powerful experience for them as well. They got a lot from this, and they're really so happy with the contribution they made to this work. Yeah.
You can imagine. Absolutely. Because yeah, these angels are amazing. That kind of brings us into the angels. When you talked about describing what the angels were holding and what was behind them, where did that information come from?
Okay, that's a good question, actually. Well, I said, okay, what angel? I wrote down the list of angels that I want to write about, the angel of this, angel of that, the topics which are interesting, topics which I could refer back to with Pablo's work and so on. And so I'd kind of visualize them. I'd kind of go to a place in my, like a shamanic journey thing. I'd go to that place, to a beautiful place, always by a waterfall, somewhere nice and gentle. And the angel would be there, and I would look at them, and see them. It was like a manifestation, wow. And I would write down, describe them, the kind of ethnicity, what colors they're wearing, what clothes they're wearing, and ask questions about them. What is he want to do? And so it was a very beautiful experience for me, very 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 deep philosophical spiritual experience for me to encounter this. So I picked my notes, and once I had the drawing, in fact, I could write about the angel without the drawing, but I like to have the drawing, a sketch, at least a sketch, so to focus, to ground it. And So I had the theme, I had the description of the angel from the actual visualization practice, and then it kind of flowed. When you're in the flow, you're in the flow. And it was a very beautiful experience. It just, the words just, kept appearing around me. I mean, I'm speaking figuratively here, but the words, that was a lovely word, that word, I want that word, that word. And you put them all together. And it flowed beautifully. Of course, in fact, I know it sounds a bit kind of weird, but sometimes I look back at the writing and think, oh my God, that's really good. You did really well, the nice turn of phrase and really fits in nicely. So sometimes I look at it, I think, wow, that's really nice. And it's not from a logical, rational place. It came with like an inspirational piece came down there. So I do feel in some respects that it's a visionary experience, which I'm describing. I think that's the best way. And the readings came through as well. The readings, there's two readings per card, an upright and reverse reading. They're not good or bad. They're just different aspects. This is you before you've changed. This is the you now. It's more in that kind of way of thinking. And so and I had plenty of time. So I did two deep edits. So I was very pleased with the publisher was very pleased with the writing. They said, we don't need to edit it. Just change the spelling from English to American. That was all.
Okay, so nice.
I had no choice in,
That's funny.
So it kind of flowed very beautifully. And in fact, when I was doing, I've written about the angels. Now I've got to write about how to use the deck and spreads and this kind of technical things. It's like suddenly I was writing poetry before. And now writing like a user manual, whole different shift.
Right.
But that gave me terms of reference, from writing about the angels to writing about a user guide. And I really experienced how beautiful and sublime writing about the angels was. And when I could compare it to writing the instructions and guidelines, which you've got to do, really important stuff. And I played with the different spreads and tested out the spreads and ideas with people who are some friends I know who are really into tarots and oracles, and they've got 30 decks, 40 decks. They're so into it. I said, try this out. And they said, and they loved it. They said, I love this spread. I'm going to use this spread for all my readings now, that kind of thing. So I've got such positive feedback from the ladies who are experienced tarot and oracle readers. So that was all good. So I did try and reach out to people to say, what do you think of this? And want to try this out. And working with the publisher Inner Traditions, they're a very professional crew. It's a pleasure working with them. And they do try and get you to do your best. And that's always welcome.
We want to hear more about the angels, but briefly, how do you recommend using the deck? Like if somebody gets the deck in the mail, like what do you think is the best way for them to first engage with it?
Well, the first thing is have a question. The question is absolutely critical. You always approach an oracle with a problem, an issue, a question, something that you want insight to, understanding of. So first is the question. Make it an important question. Not like, shall I drink apple juice or shall I drink orange juice? Something really that has meaning for you. And then I would shuffle the deck with thinking of the question, and take out one, maybe three cards. You know, three cards gives you an idea of where you're coming from, where you are, where it's going to, or even just one card. And so many people give me the feedback that I give them a reading, one card reading, and they found this was really, really valuable to them. It really helped them. So I can't say how it's going to help you. It's a very subjective thing. But if you have the question, and I would advise the question, no ands, no ors, no ifs, no buts, just a direct straight arrow of a question, you will probably get some insight, some deeper philosophical perspective of around the actual question. In fact, you may find the question you thought you had is not really the question. It's good as it works in all sorts of ways. Yeah.
And you do incorporate a upright or reverse meaning of the cards, right?
I do indeed. Yeah. The upright is people think it's a positive and reverse is a negative, but it's not. It really isn't. It's a dynamic. It's where you are and where you're going to. It's a mirror. Works both sides. And some of these readings, particularly with the elemental angels, I can see myself. Yeah, this is how I used to be, and this is how I am now. But after many years of change and transformation and work, you see yourself different now. So it's not. It's more like these are aspects that you could work on. Yeah, these are things for you to look at, to work on. So it's much more. It's positive. The reverse reading is actually quite positive. Yeah. So yeah, the decks. I really disagree with the decks and the card things which say, oh, this is really bad. You've got reverse reading. This is not good. You're in trouble. And I think that really sets up a bad vibe. And I think it's not necessary because it's not bad. It just shows you that there's more work to do. There's a further directions for you to explore.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's like kind of like a heads up or pay attention to this rather than like, you're going to have a hard time about this. Like, no, it doesn't have to be like that. It's giving you some pro tips on like what to focus on.
Exactly. It can be very, very helpful, very insightful. And probably if everybody's really honest, both readings apply to them as well. I mean, it's not black and white. You know, you can see yourself or see the situation you're in from both perspectives. It broadens the perspective and so on. Yeah.
Yeah, even if I get an upright reading or a reverse reading, I'm reading the whole thing. I'm taking into account like the upright and the reverse because it's all important and it all, you know, helps with learning. Yeah.
That was really nice to hear that you use the deck yourself in your readings as well. That's really gratifying to hear.
Since we got this in the mail, I've been using this deck as my like one card of the day.
That's fantastic.
And it's been giving me a chance to get to know some of the angels, and I've just really enjoyed it. I feel like I've really dropped in with this deck quickly, more quickly than a lot of other tarot decks I've tried.
Well, yeah, let me tell you, when I finally got my hands on the deck, I mean, everybody else had a copy before, I got one. Anyway, long story. But I get my hand on the deck and I open it up, you know, oh, it's so exciting, you know. And I thought, wow, it feels so warm. I really felt the warmth, the energy from this deck. I felt that was my first. And they've done a beautiful thing with the box and the magnet side and things. It's lovely. But the first thing I felt, the warmth. And that was a very, very, very a good sign. You know, it's warmth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has warmth. Yeah. And that's what we need.
These are some warm colors. And then the angels themselves are, you know, putting in so much energy. You know, these beings are incredible. So maybe we should dive into talking about the angels more.
Yeah, I feel like can really get the it's like a phone line to the spirit. Yeah. Who are these angels?
Who are these angels? Well, these angels, the names, well, the angels, some of them come from Pablo's stories. Pablo told me lots of stories in the past. And my favorite story, and it has to be such a personal one. Let me find the card for you. It's such a personal connection for me, was the Malka Caspi, the Angel of Trees. I don't know if you read that one, looked at that one.
Yes, I did. It's beautiful.
This one here, here. You don't often see angels of trees, but trees are very advanced, very highly aware and conscious beings in so many respects. And so Pablo told me the story, you know, and many years ago, and I never forgot it, that when he was an apprentice, he was drinking ayahuasca. And in the ayahuasca ceremony, the ayahuasca asked him, do you know the difference between an old man and an old tree? And he, I've no idea, you know. And the spirit progressed to tell him, well, when a tree becomes old, I mean old, it serves the entire community. There's monkeys, there's insects, there's reptiles, there's amphibians, all live within the tree. And it's particularly talking about the Renarco tree. This is the Renarco tree. It lives by the water in the Amazon. It's a huge tree with those multiple root systems as well, like a labyrinth. And in this labyrinth of roots live so many different types of animals. In the branches live so many different types of animals and birds and different types of plants. It's a whole kind of ecosphere of plants, from the water plants below to kind of air plants like tamshi, which have streamers and so on. And people come to the tree to collect the bark and the leaves and the roots for medicine. So when a tree becomes old, it serves the entire community, becomes a castle for everybody. Everybody gives a sanctuary here. And that's what an old person does. When they reach towards the end of their life, if they lived a good life, they leave a legacy, they leave help, they leave wisdom for other people as well, for the community. And that was such a beautiful story. I've given you a very, very crude relation of this, but I was so touched by that story. It's such a beautiful story. So when I did this, I thought, I've got to have a Renarco tree in here, a Renarco tree with an angelic aspect to it. And I was able to write that story of Pablo told me. And so that story now becomes a thing he told me, and it becomes something written down and inspirational. And only a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine showed the deck to her elderly mother, you know, and the mother drew this card. And apparently she was so emotionally overwhelmed by the message, you know, about community and legacy and living a good life and so on. It was, yeah, these cards can touch people. And that's a very, very beautiful thing to know. But that story, that's one of them. I've got lots of other cards as well. I have lots of other ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, let me just go through them here. So what have we got here? Well, some of them are very, very, very plant-orientated, like Loripe's Diva of the Plant Mysteries.
Yeah.
He would talk about hallucinogenic plants, ayahuasca, other plants as well, and how they've helped to transform humanity's consciousness and so on. And I talk about kind of the problems we have in the Western world to these plants. It's changing now. I mean, it's taking its time, but it's changing from going from class A drugs illegal, you're busted for 20 years, to something that people can help people. And it's coming into the West, Western culture, more of as a therapeutic perspective. That's where it's coming in, and help people overcome depression, PTSD, and a host of other things that pharmaceutical drugs can only kind of like a sticking plaster over. So
yeah.
So it's coming into the West, and this is what this card particularly talks about, from the indigenous wisdom and knowledge. And also I've tried to correct, you know, in some respects, now we have an idea in the Western culture that these people are primitive, they don't know anything, you know. They have a wisdom that we can hardly even imagine, you know. I mean, you know, with your tinctures and plants in the background here, that is where the indigenous people have a huge connection to, because they are in communion with the plants. Mm-hmm. For us, I mean, for us in general, a plant is a thing, a tree is a thing. It doesn't have a consciousness. But the indigenous peoples who have lived and worked with these plants can interact with the consciousness of the plants, and the plants tell them. I mean, let's talk about ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is a mixture, a combination of two plants. One is the vine, which is the Harmala, which provides the inhibits, and the chakra and the chakruna contains the DMT, the tryptamines, a whole host of tryptamines, not just DMT, and the two work perfectly together. Now, out of the, I think it's 85,000 different species of plants that they know of in the Amazon, how did they know to cook these two things together? You can't go around combining this infinite number, 85,000 times 85,000. I mean, it's going to keep the mathematicians very busy for a long time working out the odds. Mm-hmm. And the plant told us. They told us to do this and do that, you know. And I had an experience of that the other day, actually, when in a small way, I've got this giant banana tree. It's 3 meters high in the other room, and it produces bananas, you know. the future banana trees. No one knows how it happens, but it happens. And I was thinking, well, you know, I'm going to, at some stage, I'm going to downsize. So how do I do with the bananas? I can't, the thing is a huge, it's a big pot. It can't be moved. And then I got the message from the plant. It's easy, the plant said, you know, just cut the trunk down. The trunk is just a temporary thing. All the knowledge, all the wisdom, all the energy for creation is in the root. So take off the huge 3 meter thing away, and you've got the root, and that can be transported. I thought, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was awesome.
Really bothering me. It really kind of bothering me. And it's a small example, but the banana told me how to move it. You know, because it can't be moved right now. And delicious bananas. And I mean, up in the mountains in Romania, there's no way really in that tropical between the tropics kind of zone to grow bananas. I mean, they're delicious. They're the small, delicious ones. Yeah. So I asked a friend of mine who's into, you know, exotic fruits and plants and horticulture and so on. And he said, well, what you've done is you've somehow got a kind of a very specific microclimate in your house, which the plants flourish. You know? So that's a beautiful thing. Yeah, and I do commune with plants. I do kind of say hi, play nice music for them and so on. So I've got a bit of that in me as well. I don't regard them as things, as inanimate objects. You know, they're living things, and they have a consciousness, and it's just our human hubris, which has kind of dismissed us. So I think a really good thing to watch is David Attenborough's, he did it a few years ago, The Private Life of Plants. Have you ever seen that?
I haven't. I've heard of it, though.
It's beautiful, beautiful. Mm-hmm. And what is visually very striking, he uses special camera technology, which speeds up the movements of the plant. So you think, you look at plant, the plant is static. But in this kind of accelerated photography thing, the plants are moving, they're turning, they're doing things, they're interacting with each other and so on. It's fascinating. But of course, and this is also the benefit of kind of things like ayahuasca and so on. And mushrooms, the side of mushrooms, is that you can kind of move it into a deeper level of connection with the plants. Now, many times I've been in the jungle, and although the ceremonies indoors, I've gone outdoors to be with the trees and the plants, because that's how I first started to drink ayahuasca, was outdoors, in the clearing. And I look at the trees, I look at the roots, and I see waves of energy moving from the roots of the tree, and they're connecting to other trees. The whole jungle is alive. And also the leaves and the roots. And you don't see that in everyday normal consciousness. So you need to kind of step out of everyday consciousness and move into it. But you can, I think there's been some experiments by Baxter, which I wrote about in the Plant Spirit Shamanism book. I believe you read that one. And he was a CIA head honcho for lie detector tests, polygraph tests. And one day, this is my cold. He thought, well, you know, what happens if I hook up the polygraph to a plant, you know? And he did that. And he thought to the plant, it's all wired up front, I'm going to burn you, I'm going to kill you. And zoop, 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 the plant reacted to his thoughts, you know? And so, and then he changed it to mild, calm, I'm going to feed you and nurture you and so on. And the whole thing kind of went smoother. So this is not something far-fetched. This is something that was written about by Clive Baxter, the CIA lie polygraph specialist and so on. So plants are aware, they can connect to us. And I walk through the park every day, and every day I stop by a few trees and say, hello, how you doing? Good morning, good afternoon. And yeah, I know, I feel a vibe of response. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Plants are people too.
Yeah. So, but it's in the general Western milieu, general Western perspective, plants aren't alive, you know. And I talk about the whole concept of inorganic and organic with the angel as an angel, which I discuss this as well, about what we regard is as some things are living, are alive, and some things are devoid of life, have no life. And this is particularly pertaining to the angel of the mineral realm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how humanity and the mineral realm are converging very, very rapidly ever since the end of the 19th century with the advent of crystal radio. Now we're talking here, we're thousands of miles away,
yeah,
crystalline silicon technology. It's all there. I'm not even going with implants and transhumanism as well. But you can see where it's going. There's a forging between humanity and the mineral realm, not just in technology, but also in healing. People become much more aware of crystals and gemstones and so on. Yeah, this is the angel of the mineral realm. And I talk about the convergence of humanity and the mineral realm. And the mineral realm is at the basis of all life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's the basis. Everything comes from the mineral realm. In fact, and that's much, very much of Pablo's thoughts and feelings as well. He writes about this too. It's also in the Ayahuasca Visions book. Hey, listen, and in the card reading, and if you've got a reverse reading, it also suggests you look at the mineral levels in your body. You've got enough iron, you've got enough selenium, we tend to ignore that because the current food, processed food, and the way that we treat the soil with all the pesticides and insecticides, we are destroying the mineral content of the soil, which comes into our food and into our bodies. We are totally dependent for life on minerals, and it's not just a hypothetical or figurative way of speaking. We need to have them. So that's also in this the deck as well, check out your mineral levels and so on. Yeah,
those kind of mundane warnings are very important. They can be very important. That's something that, you should expect from a Oracle deck, I think, is that kind of practical advice. Like, hey, maybe you should check out your mineral levels.
I'll tell you how it happened. I was talking about this with a friend, and I was doing a random thing. I had a computer drawing. There were no cards then. There were just kind of photos and drawings and so on. And she drew a card, and she drew the mineral angel, the angel of the mineral realm, and she had a reverse reading. And I said, okay, what does this mean to you? And she said, I had a medical check recently, and I'm down on the iron, and I'm down on selenium. All my minerals, this is why I've been ill, and I'm well, and so on. I thought, wow, I've got to put that in there as well. So it came in a very, very lovely way. And I think it's very apt, because minerals are essential for life. They're the basis, the foundation for all life. And now they're starting, in many ways, as I'm describing this story and this narrative, to kind of merge with humanity. Started with crystal radios, with radio sets. And by the 1920s, there were the first public broadcasting with crystal receivers in the home. And you could say the first public broadcast in the 1920s was the first time a global reach. Up until then, there was no way you could have a global reach. Everything was done locally, or by ship, or by post, or by horse speed, or train speed. Airplanes as well. Yeah, but they didn't go very far. And the old biplanes. But the first time ever, through crystals, the mineral realm, we could reach out everywhere. That was the first public broadcast. And now it's part of the fabric of life, without our computers and phones, all which run on crystalline silicon and so on. Life will go back a few decades, I'll be okay.
Oh, yeah.
Guide, but a lot of people, what do I do? My phone doesn't, there's no phone,
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really good reminder that the reason we have internet and phone and, this technology that's connecting us is minerals, is these precious minerals, and they're inside of us. They're
everywhere,
all around us in the earth. And it's
one day it's going to happen. One day there'll be neural implants using mineral transmission systems and so on, with artificial intelligence implants. Science fiction is coming anytime soon.
It's wild.
And then you're going to have the kind of that fusion of human and mineral realm. I mean, they'll call it something else. They'll call it like cyber humans, or I have no idea what they'll call it. But it's all part of it. And I discuss this in there as well. Okay, sorry. Yes.
Oh, it's okay. That's fine.
I'll keep talking.
That's why we're here.
So to get back to the question of who are these angels? So are these angels, do most of them have a history within in that culture and in different cultures, or are they sort of not made up, but are they new from Pablo's visions and your visions and working with them? And I guess it also comes to the question of what do you believe spirits are? What are angels? even.
Well, okay, let me address the first question first.
Okay.
Well, there's a combination of Pablo's visionary experience, because some of these angels or celestial beings or ineffable beings appear in his paintings. They're not the main character. They're just there somewhere. So I know what they are, who they are, what they do. So I was able to work with some of them and bring them out. And some of the others are kind of created, well, should I say, in a very inspirational way, created by me. And as far as possible, I use Pablo's names. I've got so many unpublished notes, drawings from him, you know, I think 500 pages worth, you know, and which [S2] Wow. [S1] Is one of the instigators for me to doing this, you know. And so they're not traditional angels. I mean, the categories may be traditional, but the actual names are not traditional. Some of them are Quechua names. Some mm-hmm. of them have tribal names, like the Angel of Peace, Metsukoshi. And some of them have names which I thought, yeah, this is correct. This appeared in one of Pablo's stories, and he referred to it as having this aspect, these qualities. So that's the angel. Although I sat with the categories of angels, what angels do I want to write about? So I did the categories first, you know, the angel of peace, the angel of the three worlds, and so on. And then, okay, let me find a correspondence in Pablo's notes, Pablo's works, and so on, which I did in many cases. Some of the things that was kind of creatively inspired, yeah. Mm. Some by indigenous names as well. So, yeah, mixture. Mm-hmm. And what's the second question?
So what am angels? What are spirits from your perspective?
Yeah, my perspective, yeah. Well, it's not they're real. I mean, from my perspective, they're real. They're tangible. And they've appeared to me, well, with me. They've have a physical effect on me. I've been lifted up in the air by an invisible, incorporeal being. Magical things have happened to me. Some funny stories. I'll tell you one of the stories. Yeah, I think it answers the question in some respects. And some sort of kind of
amusement. Yeah, yeah.
So I downloaded, when I was thinking about angels, I downloaded a book on my Kindle by Lorna, I forget her name. She's written bestsellers on angels, bestsellers, not just in New Age, but bestsellers in the New York Times. And so I've downloaded a couple of her books. So I read it when I'm on the Amazon. I've got plenty of time on my hammock. I'll do some reading, catch up my reading. And I got to a section and where she described when she visited a university campus, she was watching the students, and each of them were the guardian angels, and the angels were turning the pages of the book for them. And I thought, oh God, this is so juvenile. This is so tacky, you know. I mean, oh my God. And then at that moment, the Kindle started to go page by page by page by page, out of control.
Oh wow.
God, this out of control, you know? And so I'm in the jungle here, and it's my only Kindle I've got here. I'm gonna be a piece of stuff. And then I got it under control. It stopped. Then I realized, hold on, what just happened?
Wow.
What just happened?
And it's so
never
cool.
happened before, and it's never happened again. Yeah, so they can affect, they can influence the physical realm, the electronic realm, the physical realm. I've been lifted up by invisible, ineffable something, you know. And certain times when I'm in my thing, I perceive them. They're not like beings with wings and so on, not like traditional perspectives, but that's a very good way of describing them. More as colored patterns, colored lozenges and pastels and so on, all together, like a really bright, beautiful combination of moving colors, and who can communicate with me. And I had and it all started after my accident. I had an accident back in 1984, which I write about in The Accidental Shaman, more about it, more of a biography, where I broke my neck and had severe spinal injuries. I was in a very, very bad way for many years. And it came to a point, you know, I was bitter, I was resentful, I couldn't walk, I couldn't stand up. And before I was very fit, very sporty. And I was having a healing session, physiotherapy session, that's right. And the guy suddenly stopped. And he said to me, Howard, do you want to get well again? And I didn't say, yeah, I want to get well, because I've got used to being like that, you know, used to being that kind of invalid. And I had to think about it. I said, yeah, I want to get well. And he said to me, then forgive all the people that you blame for this accident. Forgive. Mm. It was caused by human error and so on.
Mm. Yeah.
So, okay, I've got to forgive. Okay, forgive. So I kind of gripped my teeth and with all my might and force, I forgave them. And at that moment, like a weight of 10 tons lifted from me, just lifted from me. I felt literally a huge weight lifted from me. And there was this beautiful being in blissful colors right in front of me, you know, and he moved into me. It moved into me and I was in bliss. And that was, that's an angel. And then I spoke to the guy, Richard. What did you just say? What do you mean? I said nothing. Yeah, you told me to forgive. No, I didn't. He had no idea of anything what happened.
Really?
Yeah. This is how these ineffable beings can, I spoke with the Kindle story, but they can also kind of influence your minds and thinking. They're there with us. They're there as helpers and so on. And but I don't see them in traditional kind of a traditional way with exalted beings on wings, the biblical way. But yeah, they're there. And you can call them angels. You can call them celestial beings. You can call them elemental powers. You can call them ineffable beings. But they're there. And yeah. So if you're open to it, and you see the times in your life where something happened, something amazing happened, like a something that couldn't have possibly happened, mm-hmm. you've probably seen the workings of an angel there. Mm-hmm. And it's been beautifully illustrated in a movie by Wim Wenders. Yeah, Wim Wenders, the story of the angels in Germany. I forgot the name of it. It's a beautiful film. Come back to me in a minute. God, it's a great movie, and I forgot the name of it. And so where these two angels, it's a German movie, and they're angels, and they're amongst humanity, and they're doing the things which I've experienced, you know. Mm-hmm. And then one of them decides to become human. Yeah, it's a German title, Der Himmel über Berlin. Now that the heavens above Berlin. Mm. Forget the English title.
Oh yeah,
such a beautiful movie with the famous actor who's dead. But my mind's not working right now. These small things aren't happening here. But yeah, if you in your life have been touched by something that's just magical, something that couldn't have normally happened, something has turned your way, stopped you from making a misstep, stopped you from walking into the street where a car was just about to hit you, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's very subtle.
Yeah, that's such an amazing story. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm now curious, that story, that experience you had was sort of like a spontaneous visit from an angel at a time where you really needed that angel. Do you have any tips for me or for somebody who wants to open a line of communication with a particular angel? And how do you like call that in to have a dialogue? How do you honor that angel and open that line of communication?
Well, yeah, that's a big question. And yeah, I would tend to do this in a more structured way, you know, like have a structure mm-hmm. around this rather than say, okay, angelic being, come to me kind of stuff. Cause I think you've been a little bit you need more discretion on this, you know, there's lots of things out there and you want to make a good connection. And
right.
So
yeah.
my recommendation is tried and tested methods to do this. Yeah. Like practices, shamanic journey practices. Mm-hmm. You go and you have allies and you go and meet the being that you need to meet rather than think, I want to meet the angel of prosperity, for example. You know, that's coming from an ego, you know, that's coming from what I want, you know, mm-hmm. right. You go beyond the I want into what is you need. And you may not know what you need until you see you're presented with what you need. So I'll be open, but in a structured way, with a shamanic journey or meditation practice, and to ask to meet the angel or the being that you has the qualities that you need in your life. Mm. And I think that's more accurate. And that takes away the ego aspect, because there is a downside to all this as well, you know. And the downside is the ego. Oh, this angel met me and he told me I was so special, so beautiful, so wonderful, so amazing. Bam. You know, you're moving down to Darth Vader country there, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So good point.
Best to have a structure, best to go for what is best for you, what you need rather than what you want. I think that's much, much safer way to do this.
Yeah. And I think that's important too. Like, in the same way that an oracle, what's important is the question for contacting an angel. It's also why do you want to, mm-hmm. and what particular angel you know, like, why do you want to? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think looking at your motivations and intentions is always an important part.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, it's okay to say, okay, what is my card for the day? What is the angel message for the day? I think that's fantastic.
Right.
Just in the morning, you draw a card, pick up. Yeah. That's what I'm paying attention to today. That's what I'm going to be on going to look into this today. That's what I'm going to draw in today. But that's also an intention, you know?
Yeah.
So that you know, what influences, what energies, what qualities do I want to connect to today? What is going to be good for me? Where should I be going with this? So that's mm-hmm. a good thing. But any oracle, you have to have present something, a question, a problem, an issue, you know, you need some help with something. And that's how oracles right. work. You know, they're not going to, there's no point in doing a spread unless you have something that you want looked at, so you want your mm-hmm. questions over. Yeah. So the question is really, really important. I speak mm-hmm. about the question. You know, I mean, you know, I've done a few oracle evenings online, you know, with various people. And the first time I did this, or second time I did this, everybody asked the same question, you know. Mm. You know? And I didn't know the time, but they just told you, this is my question, and what the card, I drew a card for them. And the question was, what is my spiritual path? What
yeah.
is stopping me from my spiritual path? And I say, hold on, guys. You know, you know, you want to have a question which you can actually kind of work with. You know, and I said, when you go to a divination with local indigenous kind of people and people who are not so much in the Western culture, they have different kinds of questions. Why am I unlucky? Why can't I get a job? What is stopping me from being healthy? Is my boyfriend cheating on me? These are the questions, the everyday questions, the mundane questions, which are really important. In the West, I made a separation between what is everyday and what is spiritual. That's another right. problem as well. So you could say the everyday is spiritual and the spiritual is everyday. If you really, really want to take a look at it, you need to have kind of both philosophical perspectives in this. But as soon as you start to make a difference between this is my everyday life and this is spiritual, I only ask the oracles and do my spiritual work with spiritual stuff, you lose a lot. And yeah. this is what we can learn from the wisdom of the indigenous people. So that their spiritual life is their mundane life, everyday life is nothing. It's not a separation that we have, this artificial barrier.
Yeah, I do understand that question, though, because in the West, we are so divorced from any spirituality, like modern industrial civilization society is, it's just so materialistic. There, you know, trees aren't alive. They're inanimate objects.
Yeah.
But there are also so many, in the age of the internet, so many different paths that one can walk, you know, that one can taste. But to get anywhere, you need to go deep. You know, you can't just sample this and that from all the buffet of the world's spiritual traditions and expect to get anywhere deep. You know, you've got to go deep. So sometimes it can be, I see where that's coming from, you know?
Yeah. You got to follow this guy here, the heart, you know,
yeah.
you got to go with the feelings. You know, another problem with the West is we've given too much prominence, too much importance to the mental realm, to our minds.
Yeah.
Mm.
Rather
yeah.
than our feelings. The truth is in our bodies. Our bodies can only say the truth. They can't deceive. They can't use guile or deception. They say, this is what is. This is what it is. The mind plays tricks. And but knowing that, I mean, I'm not different from anybody. I know my mind plays tricks. So if I want to know the answer to something, I want to know what is the truth for me, I have to feel it. And if I
yeah.
then that's it. But the mind, you know, wants to make it nice and make it, you know, fit in with everything and so on. But the body just tells you what it is, and that's the feeling. So if you follow your feelings and pay attention to what you're feeling, I think that's a good path. And then you'll know, yeah, this spiritual discipline, I feel that feels right for me, you know, and then you have something there to follow. Yeah.
Yeah. That reminds me of something one of my spiritual mentors said in response to somebody who was like, just really, they didn't know what they wanted, you know, like they're like, I don't know what I want. And they're like, well, a dog knows what it wants.
Yeah.
You know, a child knows what it wants. Why don't you? It's this mental thing.
Yeah, the person really went inside of them. What is that I want? Yeah, I want peace. I want to be happy, whatever, something simple and meaningful like that. But the mind, you know, it's we think too much sometimes. And that's, yeah. that's not a criticism. It's just we overthink everything, you know.
Yeah, without yeah, sure. We do.
And that's the truth. It's about truth. And that's, we have it here in our hearts, in our body.
Mm, yeah, that's a really beautiful reminder, is just to be in touch with your heart and
yeah.
Can't really go wrong there. The mind can definitely take you down the wrong direction, but the heart knows.
Speaking of my mind, I can go all sorts of the crazy stuff, all the mistakes, the crazy stuff happens from here in the mind, you know.
Yeah.
It's when I listen to my heart, then I know I'm on a good path, I'm on a true path, and things work out well. But that's how we live. That's the world we live in. You know, with so much prominence and importance and value, you know, value has been attributed to the mind rather than our feelings. That's also a masculine feminine issue as well, another dynamic there as part of this as well. So us men have really got to kind of learn from women, the feminine, and really connect to our feelings much, much more. So yeah, it's a big mixture, but lots of things to do, lots of things to learn, a lot of things to co-create and so on. Yeah. The world is messy, but it's always been messy. And all we can really do is trying to kind of make our bit good, you know.
Yeah. This has been a wonderful discussion, Howard. I'm really glad that we got to do it. Is there anything that you'd like to share with the audience before we stop recording?
Yeah, well, I have to thank you guys for inviting me. It's been a real pleasure and been real fun. I said, yeah, fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a website with my books and so on and so forth. It's gcharing.com. Maybe you can stick it on somewhere. So
yeah, sure. We'll stick all that in the description.
And I'd like to thank you again for inviting me. It's been a real fun. Yeah.
It's a
pleasure meeting you guys. Thank you.
Yeah.
Pleasure meeting you.